Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us with a talkcast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444, just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web, just go to the Talk Show website at www.talkshow.com. Search for call ID 17702. And of course, you can join us over on Twitch. So go over to twitch.com/SFUOnCall. You can join the chat room there. I co-broadcast it. That's where you'll see the video. I don't have video streamed over at TalkShoe. And so join the group. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, my account there is also sfuoncall. I also have a personal account, which is Paul Franz, PaulFranz. Yes, I am still on Twitter. I'm also on Facebook, but let's not talk about that. And, you know, so my name is Paul Franz, PaulFranz. Of course, I also have Franz Games. Follow for any announcements when it comes to Franz Games, you know, including SFB Online, Starfleet Warlord, and FedCom Online. And of course, this lovely talkcast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. When it comes to news ADB, it's very, very small, very short. The biggest one is Jane Sexton. Bedeau. Yeah, Bedeau. I think it's Bedeau now. If Jane, if you're listening, I'm sorry if I screwed up your name. And she is now the operating manager, which is quite cool to see her back, you know, fully back into the office and running things a little more than she was before. That's always good to hear. There's some quick things to remind you when it comes to ADB. They do have things like the cadet training manual, and you can get that from the local e-tellers. You've got your Warehouse 23, you've got your Drive-Thru RPG, and you've got your War Game Vault. And you'll find that available for free from those different e-tellers. Also, they do have an introduction to the Starfleet Universe Prime Directive and role-playing game on Warehouse 23. If you go to Warehouse 23, look for Prime Directive, and you should find the introduction to the Starfleet Universe, and you should be able to find it there. It's, you know, I forget which engine they use for that one, whether that is GURPS or something else, maybe just D6 or the D20 engine. It's been a while since I've actually looked at Prime Directive, so I can't tell you exactly which game engines they currently support. I know they had a big one, you know, in the past where they wanted to do a lot of them, but not as much as these days. Reminder, when it comes to SFB Online tournament, the Sapphire Star 11 tournament is starting. So there's still 3 slots left. So if you jump really quick, go to the sign up page, or easiest way first is to go to the Starfleet Games discussion, you know, the Discuss forum, and there you'll find the Sapphire Star 11 tournament, the topic in that, and you can click the link there, or you can just, at the very least, tell them that you want to sign up, and of course you have to remember to pay your $10, which is always required. When it comes to the online client, not much stuff happening as of late. And when it comes to libraries, they've been pretty static at this point. So with that is the news for this week. And it's me, Samuel L. Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, well, it's me, it's Dave, you know, he's hanging out. And of course, we also have Gary. How you doing, Gary?
Hello, everyone. Happy episode 1 of Strange New World Day.
One thing I just...
Or a Midwestern Spanish, they call it the Cinco de Psycho.
Cinco de Psycho.
Oh, that reminds me, isn't Barry said he was going to be somewhere? Or is that postponed or something?
That's possible. I forgot. Last week was I was a little bit tired, so I don't remember everything that we discussed.
Mm-hmm.
But
the thing is though is that I was saying last week that I'd like to because we talked about the quantum wave torpedo and we talked a bit about using it in the alpha octant against like the ISC or Gorons or whatever. Andromedans to Orion planets, and I was basically hoping that there'd be a week where we could speculate on Omega in terms of like firing it at the Trobriand or Probe or Neutrons, Federal Republic, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is that I was kind of hoping that it would be a conversation that the three of us could have, like as I'd like to get Barry's insight on all the things as well. But so I didn't know. Is it still a topic that we should talk about ourselves and then if Barry shows up, invite him in? Or do you think it's a topic we should stick in the drawer and wait until all three of us are here?
I'd say stick in the drawer for the moment because definitely Barry have a lot more to say about that because he's a lot more familiar with the Omega weapons. I've read them,
mm-hmm.
but I've never... Barry's actually played them a lot more often than I have ever done. You know, I've done maybe once or twice, maybe even three times, but I played like the weapons like once. So mm-hmm. if we could table that discussion for Barry, you two have the themes are so freaking similar. then I think we'd be better off actually. You did, one thing you did give me an interest, which is, and I almost thought you gave me the wrong number for the captain's log, which was Omega Lost Futures. Because when you mentioned that, like, captain's log number 36 has the Lost Futures.
36, that's right.
What's that? I'm sorry.
That's correct. Yeah, 36.
Yeah, number 36. Yeah, because the reason I looked for it, like, where can't find it? Oh, there. Oh, no, finally saw it near the top. Because unfortunately, I never know where. It's one of those ones that you don't know exactly where it's going to be placed. It might be in an SFB section. It might be, you know, any place else basically. But I found that it was page 27. Mm-hmm. Written by our Bruce Grawl and no. Oh, that's not good.
What's going on?
Dave said he messaged me in TalkShoe and I never saw it. That's weird. Okay. Well, I see it now, Dave. That's the important thing. Wow. Not many people there. But anyway, yeah. I thought it would be interesting to look at. The one thing obviously has the least amount of stuff about it was that Ikari Dynasty, which I just the, even the brief text about it was, I thought was kind of interesting, which was the whole idea was there was going to be some... an empire from some unknown, you know, from unknown, say they were to be from the unknown Sigma sector of the galaxy, having escaped from some disastrous war with the idea of building a new power base in the Omega sector. These were never designed, and the intention was to use one of the, or more of the entries from the ancient, at this point, it's really ancient. Nexus number 13 race design contest, as they did with the Branthians. Branthodons. Which, you know, obviously, that makes that's that kind of empire is wide open, especially since they acknowledge that there's absolutely no work on except for that it they're from the Sigma sector. You know, so that leaves it wide open. Hey, Iggy. And then, of course, and then there's the Splinter Collective,
yeah,
which is a combination of L'Oreal and Singer technology installed on L'Oreal hulls.
Well, the other thing about that, though, is that given that the Singers, their home space was basically close to the L'Oreal home stars rather than the Splinter Collective, it would probably make more sense for any kind of Singer technology to show up in the home collective rather than in the Splinter Collective, because that's where the surviving Singers would be. Like, it's a long distance away on the map from the Splinter Collective to the home stars, so I don't know if it would make sense to have the Singer refugees cross such a far distance to set up shop in the Splinter Collective, and especially because a lot of the planets in that in the Splinter Collective, they used to be blood-filled planets until the soldier drained them of life, so they'd be difficult for a species to colonize or to, you know, try to, you know, deal with, work with.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah. So I don't. I mean, I guess. Yeah, but it's just better that it actually ever happens in the story.
Well, understood. And as was mentioned in the article, that basically they were just mostly a historical footnote, which to me means that even if they would have written up anything about it, because to me it seems like it's less important than some of the other ones, you know, which, you know, obviously the Zosman Marauders, which we know about, and we actually discussed about last week, and the Peravians, of course, which we also discussed. The, of course, an interesting one is, of course, the Jindarians, which are, that's a, which one something we, I'm not sure if you and I have discussed or not, but, you know, the whole thing with obviously the Jindarians living, that one no one knows how long their species, you know, the species of the Jindarians, the race, the Jindarians are, how long they've been in space. Because, you know, they no longer have a home planet, at least don't know of one, never speak of it. You know, and so the question is how far have they gone in the galaxy? You know, and that's one thing that this was looking into, which is called the Jindarian Freehold. Yeah, it has established that there were Jindarians just about everywhere. But I want to make them, this is Bruce Grawl, mentions that he wanted to make them different in Omega Sector. Just repeating them wholesale seemed pointless. My idea of a freehold was never more than a concept, but it was a concept many found interesting. Some local condition, perhaps a black hole or an X-ray pulsar or something like that, made it impossible for stars in certain small region to form planets. The result, the star system, after star system, was composed entirely of asteroids. Virtual limitless resources, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Basically, the whole idea is that the Jindarians would settle down because of, you have this one weird pocket of space, which is just asteroids and no planets. Meaning that there's no, for the most part, there's no reason for any other umpire to really want to be in that space, except for possibly do what the Jindarians do, which is mining.
Well, in terms of technology, I guess one way I was thinking about it was to say that whatever ships the Alpha or LMC Jindarians had starting in Y1 would be the same ones that they have there. But as the technology progresses, they wouldn't, like, for example, like when fast patrol ships start coming along, they'd invent an entirely different fast patrol ship based on the Neutron or the FRA, volatile warp technology. So they'd be the kind of gunboats you see much on Omega-5 rather than the gunboats that you'd see in the Alpha Octant and that sort of thing. So it would minimize the number of new SSDs you need to use because most of the standard ones would be more or less the same. It's just the more advanced technologies or the later technologies, rather, that would become a different thing in terms of SFP terms.
And actually, one thing that I was just noticing here, which is that it mentions here the last paragraph, second last paragraph, without the need of constantly fighting each other, although there are certain would do so part time, of course, they would doubtless be a socially friendly base of each other. This is actually mentioned beforehand, which was dozens of separate Kajnarian caravans could coexist in a relatively small space because of the riches that were available to them. And of course, they could adopt some local Omega technology, so the SSD would be enough different to be worth printing. Part of the Freehold would be scattering of dead ships and refugees from devastated races. You would see a rogue hybrid without a queen, the lost Varisal, or no end of others tolerated by the Zendarians. It would be a good RPG setting, and I agree there that. Which is actually that brings up that's a good question, because the thing is, when it comes to Prime Directive itself, Prime Directive really never, to my knowledge, they never even got to the doing anything about the Omega sector at all.
There was an article in the captain's log that provided provisional data for the old Prime Directive system, so not GURPS or D20 Modern. It's like the system that kind of like PD1, I guess they call it nowadays. There actually is a PDF of it available on the ADP website. So it just basically gives you listings for about six or seven of the Neutron member species, as well as none of the Omega 3 or 4 impulse. So there's no Eridani or Belovsko. So it's basically like Fiery and male and female Probe, that sort of thing. So, but the thing is that system, I mean, trying to figure out how to convert it into the GURPS or any of the modern systems might be a challenge. So, but it does actually include a little bit of info in terms of what happens to your character if the Caesarians infect it.
Yeah, as it is, the whole idea of doing RPG of the Omega sector would be quite interesting, just because of, unlike the Alpha Octant was mostly made up of humanoid, races. Unlike, a lot of the Omega Octant, there was a lot more of different shapes and sizes, and I'm just imagine trying to have, let's say, like, as weird as it might sound, a peace conference in the Omega Octant, where you have the different the diplomats, of the different empires coming together. That would be really weird, just because of the different requirements of each race, basically. So, anyhow, this is one thing I never heard of, which is called the scone. It's not a scone, the scon threat. The scon were a race from subspace, driven insane by subspace communications. They eventually found out how to break into our universe, began attacking anyone who used subspace communication, i.e., everyone. Their ships can teleport around and turn space itself against their enemies. Oh, geez. Although how they did these things was lost to uncoverable files. Their experiments created wormholes mentioned in Omega-4 history. The Scun would evolve and be a threat across the entire galaxy, keeping up with normal space technology all the way through X2 era. No work had been done on their shipping or weapon designs, and much work would have been needed to establish them as a worthy opponent, not just a vaguely annoying set of random visitors. You know, like a whole idea of a random monster encounter in D&D. I'm just thinking about that. When it comes to teleporting around, it sounds something like the Wrynn, where, you know, the Wrynn, that's how they would get around their nebula, if I recall correctly, that they teleport from point A to point B. Now, turning space into itself against the enemy, that's be interesting. Yes.
Well, years ago, on the BBS, I actually created a number of threads. Now, this was well before Captain Love 50 or 52 or anything, so this was before any of these Lost Futures empires started to appear, like, in SSD form or rule form. But I did create a couple of threads which were intended to kind of corral the information that was known to exist for these Lost Future empires. And let's see if I can find it now. So are you on the BBS right now?
No, but I can be. Just give me a sec. Okay, I'm on it. What topic?
All right. So if you go to the SFB proposals board and go to new ships.
Okay. New ships.
And then if you So go to Omega and Magellanic proposals.
Okay.
And then you should see three threads. That each begin with Omega's Lost Futures. So, for example, there's one that lists the Acheri as well as the Scum and the Zazuns.
Yeah, I see them.
Yeah, so I try to basically use these threads to kind of basically post an overview of whatever existed, you know, based on the CL36 info, but also like whatever kind of footnotes were in the 2011 version of the Omega Master Rulebook. Or that were in other places to try and give a sense about what's going on here. Mm-hmm. If I recall correctly, the Scum were actually done by, let me see here, because there was a post here by, I want to say, Glenn Hopfner. He basically said that he posted his original ideas for the Scum, in terms of like what he had in mind. So, but of course, the difference between what those ideas might be and what, if anything, these guys might be like, if they ever get put into print, is another story.
Right. Oh, interested. Yeah.
Well, that was in 2013 he posted that. Wow.
Yeah, I know. 9 years ago.
Yeah. But,
time flies, man.
Really? So,
but yeah, I see. Yeah. Glenn Hefner or Hopfner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like I see the post where he said, you know, as the original creator of Scon, I'd like to post here my original ideas. Where I still have the original submission somewhere. So. Interesting. I didn't know he was actually part of it. I'm going to see further on. Does he post anything?
Yeah, some of this Zeldin stuff is out of date. It's been superseded by more recent stuff. But the Viscon stuff is still there's no further progress there. But the thing is, though, is that when it comes to the various lost future empires, with respect to Glenn, much as I think that there's relatively easier projects that could be done, because part of the issue as well is that if it's something that gets put into a captain's log, it needs to be something that doesn't take too much space.
Right.
Because in the results, there's always a lot of competition for page count. In
right. Log. By size so chunks.
If it's something that, if an empire has too many new rules or new weapons that they need, I mean, those can squeeze out other things, or they get squeezed out because recent issues have generally had no more than four or sometimes two non-alpha SSDs, and then that's not counting the pages that you might need for an update file, if there's not some other update file that's competing for it, or if it's just to give the R section write up to explain what these things are. So the Sosmans, they just needed the stealth field and option not rules, so they weren't too difficult.
Right.
And then the Paravians, the Omega Paravians, the anti-proton variants, they didn't need new rules at all because the rules already exist in, for the Ematrians and the Warps, so they use the same weapons. And so but the challenge, though, with something like the Scion is that you basically need to have a whole E-modules worth of stuff just to express who these guys are and how you're actually supposed to use them on the tabletop.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I think some of the other candidates, like the Volpa, for example, I think they might be a relatively easy one to do because they don't really have much in the way of new technology, or at least so we think. And there's already a sample Volpa ship in Module Omega 2, so one can already see how they move away. Actually, what's funny is that there's actually already a Shapeways miniature for that Volpa ship, and you can actually see how the outline of it is much more aggressive than the Mitron ship that it's based on.
Okay, Shapeways project. It's always how way I get there.
In fact, I actually, if you go to the FedCom forum.
Who? Okay, I'm there.
So if you go to where it has miniatures.
Oh, there it is. Got it.
And then click on there's a thread there that says My ABB Shapeways Minis.
Got it.
So, the first page, you should see a group of six miniatures.
Mm-hmm.
So the orange one on the top right is the Volpa Blockade Runner.
Oh, okay.
And if you scroll further down, one of the pages I've actually posted. A few pictures of what the miniature looks like back then it was frosted ultra detail, but now it's smooth fine detail plastic. So that's basically what it looks like when you get it out of the package. And then the pictures below are my feeble attempt at painting it.
Okay. Let me look at this because. Okay. Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, because the two are very similar. They'll actually use different colors. There it is, right there.
Yeah, I tried to give the Nisron ships a red hull color, but then I tried to give the Volpa ship kind of a blood orangey kind of color.
Yeah.
To kind of
Yeah, right there. Pretty darn good job.
That's the thank you. But see, the one of the key things about the Volta ship is that it doesn't have, you know how you might notice how many of the Meteoron ships have like a floating platform on the aft, you know, the kind of wing thing that's just in front of the engines, like.
Right.
And the wing is basically where you have the forward arc tachyon guns together with the tachyon missiles on either side and a few of the phasers.
Mm-hmm.
So the Volta blockade runner doesn't have those. It doesn't have the flying wing. It's basically, it's a more kind of like self-integrated hull, if that makes sense. Because you see the tachyon missile racks are kind of just like a little kind of like thing there on the back. And then the tachyon guns and the phasers are scattered around the outside of the hull.
Right. Right. Wow.
So my kind of reasoning would be that if we ever do get to see any dedicated Volta SSDs, then a good way to distinguish them from the Meteorons would be to do the same thing, basically say that they kind of converted them into a similar style, but gave them more kind of aggressive loadouts compared to the Meteoron standard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the phasers for the Volpa reminds me of the Klingons, you know, with the phasers on the wings, that kind of thing.
Now, there are a few notes scattered around the various rule books in terms of what the Volta get up to.
Mm-hmm.
But like, for example, you know how there's different tachyon missile racks in the rules?
Yeah.
Like A through E. But we only usually see two of them, A and B. So I'm trying to remember now, because A has only three what's the word?
Missiles?
Munitions. Slots. Spaces for missiles with fixes, like,
right?
Like, for example, if you had a Type A drone, right, that's four spaces, or is it four? Is there some other word that you use?
No, spaces.
Yeah. So the main difference, okay, so the Type A rack, that's the standard one, that has space for just three missiles, but no reloads. And it, you can only fire one missile for each pair of racks per turn. So if your ship only has one missile rack, it only fires once every two turns. So it's like the way the Klingon ships had been, like, in earlier time periods.
Hmm.
And then the Type B is the one that has five spaces instead of three, so you can set up to five missiles, but it still has no reloads.
Mm-hmm.
And the Type C, if I recall correctly, it's a fast loading one. So you can launch one from each rack every turn. And then the Type D has a single set of reloads. And the Type E is a bigger one that they have on bases, but we don't actually have any of the bases that have those yet, because most of the Meteoron bases haven't been printed, haven't been drawn up yet.
Mm-hmm. Where is it? Okay. Oh, okay. Down below? No, I don't see it.
What are you talking about?
Is a Volpa with the Meteoron?
Well, okay, so...
I'm thinking about the Shapeways.
I think they're still listed with the Meteorons, because I don't think there's I don't think that there's, because there's literally only one ship for them.
Right. Well, that's why I looked at, and I don't see Volpa listed on the left hand side.
Yeah, I'm just gonna bring up the Shapeways. I'm 99% sure that that they could just list the bundle niche ROMs, because they're kind of like a sub niche ROM faction, if that makes sense.
Right, right. Which is why I was thinking about the Maze Run.
Yeah, because historically, the niche ROM alliance was founded by three mammalian species. So there's the Tazol, who are humanoid, the Walini, who are like bat-like people, and the Vopa, who are wolf-like. But after the Mishma Civil War, the Vopa were defeated, so a lot of the Vopa basically gave up on the idea of the alliance and decided that they would rather break away and form an independent country, which they ran.
Yep.
So the Blockade Runner was basically modified from a Mishma destroyer and used during these rebellions. And then later in the timeline, they actually managed to build, like when the Mishra got distracted by the Andromeda from the Soldier, so the Volta were able to basically use the Chaos to reestablish themselves as a separate nation, a separate Star Nation.
Okay. Sorry, I had to mute myself. But actually, the Volpa Block Runner is with a Maze Run.
So yeah, basically, according to their rules in the Omega Master Rulebook, the Volpa supposedly developed, they deployed Type D missile racks during the Second Great War, which starts in Y-180. So, but the thing is that the SSD for the Blockade Runner only has Type A racks. So, my thinking is that maybe when the first Volta ship showed up, initially they only have Type A's, but they maybe they'll get like a rack refit, whereas the Type A gets upgraded to Type D. So, kind of like with most drone users in the Alpha Octant, eventually upgrade their drone racks to something.
Mm-hmm.
But also, the Volpa tend to they tend to be more kind of like, for example, the variants that they do have, they tend to get rid of their probe launchers and replace them with missile racks because I guess they're much more aggressive. So presumably, any kind of standard variants, like for example, like a maybe a Volpa variant of a heavy cruiser, maybe you would do the same thing. It would just get rid. It wouldn't have too much in the way of like additional heavy weapons, mm-hmm. but it might have more missiles.
Oh, okay.
That's a theory, anyway.
That sounds kind of similar to, in my mind, in the way Klingons versus Zinni. Maybe. I thought when I first said it, it seemed like a good comparison, but I'm not so sure anymore. Okay.
But yeah, so anyway, leaving the missile rack thing aside, the technology that the Volta use initially are basically the same as the Nisrons. So working up their SSDs wouldn't be too much of an issue in that sense. The main thing would be in the seventh cycle, like after the Andromedans and Soldier are defeated, the Volta start expanding and they actually start acquiring technologies from other empires. So for example, in the Y-210, they go to war with the Bari and they defeat them.
Mm-hmm.
So Bruce Gull is suggesting that they get samples of Bari technology as well. The only thing is that which Bari technology they want to bother with is another story, because the only really interesting weapon the Bari have is the particle splitter torpedo. And right now, that weapon is restricted to the Bari themselves. So the question would be, if you wanted the Volta to get that weapon, would that be a problem, or would it be the spoils of war, so to speak?
Mm-hmm. D- Don't mind me. I'm looking, quick looking at the history of the Volpa in the Omega Master Rulebook.
So they don't have a separate entry. Basically, what they have is in the standard, in the overall Omega timeline, there's entries for the Volpa, like in the latter half of the, like by themselves, like in the latter half of the section of the timeline itself. But then also, the Blockade Runner is listed in the R section for the Mitrons themselves.
Well, Volpa almost like a mercenary section of the Mazerons, or?
No, they were basically, because they helped found the Alliance, and up until the end of the Mazeron Civil War, they used the same ships as everyone else in the Alliance. So it was like a common heavy cruiser built by everybody. But the main problem was political, because there was a faction of the Volpa that came to dominate the other Mazeron species, and they felt that they were the ones who should stay in charge. But then when they lost the Civil War, they basically, the opinion shifted towards them, rising up to break away from the Alliance so that they found their own realm. So, but that which they eventually do. So it's basically kind of, there's not really good a comparison in the Alpha Octant, because both the ISC and the Feds managed to keep it together. Mm-hmm. But I suppose, yeah, there's not really good. I mean, even the Winds, because the Winds are kind of, don't really have anywhere else to go. I mean, there was the time when the usurper packed up and brought a bunch of his loyalists to fight the war for turn and didn't come back. So the Winds who were left basically managed to just kind of like reform the Wind government without him. And that's basically the way that the Winds have been ever since. So, but I mean, whether or not the usurper actually won or died, or, you know, because a lot of his descendants, I mean, like, it doesn't seem like that. It doesn't seem that any of the Wind ships that went into Xinti space stayed there, because, like, there doesn't seem to be any rules, like, for the Xintis to use Wind ships. Like, maybe the survivors just went back home or something. But, I don't know. Like, it's kind of messy in terms of, like, it hasn't really been spelled out what the aftermath of the War of Return is in the Alpha Octant. I mean, like, but anyway, so in Omega, though, like, it's kind of trickier, because I guess the Mitrons weren't entirely sure what to do with the Volpa afterwards, because even they were seriously weakened by that time. So I guess the question would be, if they continue to blame the Volpa for all the bad things the Mitrons did before, then does that mean they have to basically keep the Volpa down? Or does it mean that if they decide to parole the Volpa and reintegrate them into the Alliance, does that mean that the surrounding empires, like the Trobriand and Probra and stuff, have an excuse to finish the Mitrons off? Or would they need the Volpa in order to not have that happen? So there's all these kind of, like, you know, political stuff that you could speculate upon even before you get to the point where the Volpa decide to do the wrong thing. So,
understood.
Oh, by the way, I don't know if you've been checking out the BBS lately, but there's actually been some discussion about some of the simulator empires. I don't know if you've seen any of that recently.
No.
Yeah, so the main discussion is there was somebody who was requesting a plasma variant of the Frax AFD.
Yes, I saw that.
And then Steve Cole decided that rather than just do the weapon by itself, you could basically convert the Frax into a plasma simulator empire, the Prax or whatever, and have this plasma AFD be just like one part of a full plasma weapon suite that these guys would have.
Yeah, that's always well. It's a AFD. That's true. So, my quest is mentioned, you know. But again, this is just my opinion. Steve will do whatever Steve wants to do. Yeah. Yeah, I've read a little bit earlier on about that, and I know there was some argument about this proposal for like a plasma version of the AFD, which was that plasma K is basically what you charge for. You know, you have to like a quarter point of energy to activate a canister. Now, the tough part, if you want to stick true to that, well, actually, no. AFDs have the same issues, don't they? Which is reloads.
Well, the only thing is that looking at it from a Federation Commander perspective, the Frax, as is, they don't actually have AFDs in FC because... basically, their weapon mounts have been streamlined to drone racks, and I think there's ADDs on one of the subs. But so they basically just have disruptors, phasers, drones. So in theory, if these plasma guys were being converted to Fed Commander, they could skip that weapon too. So it would just be a Seraphy Battles thing to consider in terms of what they do with. But what I was wondering is, because technically speaking, some of these simulator empires,
right,
they could well be in the files of many of the ships that show up in the Federal Republic. So, or maybe even the Paragons might have brought some if they stole any from the Borns.
Right.
So, the question is. How many, if any, of the Module C4 simulator empires might actually be used in Omega? And if so, do they use them as is, or do they convert them to Omega weapons?
Right. Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got a point there. Especially considering, if you think about it, my assumption is that since the borders of the Omega empires were so fluid because of them being constantly at war that, you know, one way of you know, you actually want to simulate some weapon or some improvement that you can do in simulation, you couldn't do it in actuality, for the different empires that they normally fought against. What that would mean when it comes to the simulators, because that's one of the reasons why you got the barbarians for the ISC, is because of they just use that the barbarians were a generic empire and they just throw the different weapons on top of and say, okay, well, this now this barbarian is now simulating the Romulans or the Gorns or whatever other empire that they wanted to simulate.
Well, actually, I started a thread the other day about that very topic. It's in that same Omega Magellanic Proposal section, and I actually mentioned that the Omega Barbarians, we don't really need to do much. Like, you basically just, the main difference would be that the weapon option mounts could be chosen from the Omega empires, but also you can change the phasers. So, for example, like I think the standard SSDs for Barbarians just have phaser 1s and phaser 3s or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So instead, you basically just install, like, say, if you want to be a Mistron type Barbarian ship, you just slap in the wide angle phasers, and then you choose the Tachyon missiles and Tachyon guns, and then I guess the power options would be auxiliary power reactors, because the Mistrons don't have warp reactors. So, but if you decided to go for Caligar instead, then you would use the warp reactors, because they use them on their historical ships. So you'd be able to, you basically, all it would be is just like maybe a few notes in a captain's log update. Like, you wouldn't need new SSDs or anything, except, like, for example, if you're doing things like X-ships or fast patrol ships, because I don't think there are any Barbarian fast patrol ships, but if there were, they wouldn't be the same ones that the ISC would make in Hoth.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would make sense to a certain degree. The only reason I say to a certain degree, because of my understanding, was that the Barbarians were, I see anyway, were initially, the idea was to prepare them for combat when they finally engage them, and enforce a peace onto the galaxy. The thing is, the PS existed after that, didn't they? I mean, before the IC tried to, force the peace. Yeah.
Okay, so the ISC star system that showed up in Omega shows up in Y178. So, if one assumes that their computers had the Barbarian SSDs that existed to that point on file, then simulators, if the Federal Republic got access to those, then what they would then need to do is, once newer technologies after that, like gunboats and stuff, come along, they could basically do with that. But what you could even do is, you could simplify the whole thing, because, like, say, for example, if you are doing a Barbarian fleet that's pretending to be the Mistrons, maybe you could just use the Mistron PFs that are in Module Omega 5 and just don't bother creating, like, actual Barbarian PFs, if that makes sense. Just
right.
Say that it's part of the weapon suite that you give the Barbarians if they're simulating XYZ Empire. Because the thing as well is that, because in the Alpha Octant, you only need to do one type of gunboat, because everyone has the same size gunboats, and they all come in flotilla 6-6. But in Omega, gunboats can be huge, or they can be tiny. And they can come in flotillas as small as 4 or as large as 8. So, but you have to do 5 different types of gunboats, and then have the Barbarians in Omega pick one of those 5? I don't think so. I think it'd be better just to, in retrospect, I'm just thinking, it'd be better just to give them, just say that they use the whichever Empire you're pretending they are, just give them the gunboats for that Empire. And because it's the actual ships themselves would be the main thing in terms of reconfiguring them.
Understood. Yeah.
But there was an idea I had for the Frax, though.
Mm-hmm. The Frax?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They were simulated. Yeah.
That's right. So, now the Klingon ships that show up in the Y-170s, you can assume, one could probably assume that they have the Frax on file that they knew about. But if you think about, say, the Frax submarines, because in the Alpha simulators, the Frax subs use cloaking devices.
Right.
And they've got things like the missile racks that you can launch, quote-unquote, underwater. And they have the Axion torpedoes as well. Now, in Fed Commander, they have the Axion torpedoes, but the rules are much more simplified. They don't have the full... They don't do the same thing that SFB Axions do. And also, there are no dedicated missile rack rules in FC. Basically, the frack subs just have standard drone racks, but they have specific rules about launching them, quote-unquote, underwater. So It's like really cut down just to stop you from getting away from the spirit of FedCom, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So what I was thinking is that there's only one cloaking device, maybe two, that's known to exist in the entire Omega Atom. And it probably doesn't need to be any more because, but on the other hand, I was thinking that in the simulators, maybe you could modify the subs in Omega so that they use the stealth field instead.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, so, and what I was thinking as well is, so even if you're using the stealth field, you're still pretending that the ship is underwater. So I would basically change it because, as we were mentioning before, regular Zosman ships, when they have the stealth field up, they act as if they're under passive fire control. So they can't launch seeking weapons that need guidance. They can't launch those.
Right.
And also they have like a range issues in terms of launching self-guided seeking weapons and so on. So, but that still doesn't quite replicate what like a submarine would do. So what I would say for them is, in this instance, is the Yaxion torpedo is unique enough that it fires under as if it's under active fire control. But, and also that any tachyon missiles, because I would give the fracs a meter on tachyon missiles rather than drones, because I really want to keep drones out of Omega as much as possible.
Right, agreed.
So any tachyon missile racks that the submarines have, they'd be able to launch them self-guided, basically using the similar kind of rules that under that cloaked missile drones would use for the Alpha Octant fracs. But I would not allow them to fire their phasers while the stealth field is active. So they have to surface, so to speak, in order to use their weapon suite normally. So it's almost like you're cloakifying them rules-wise, like in that sense. Because, but I think it's a fair trade-off compared to giving them the Axion that can hit normally, so to speak.
Sorry, just, definitely be an interesting idea to incorporate that. Man, that'd be a nasty, nasty empire with using the Zosman it's not cloaking, jeez.
Stealth field.
Stealth field, thank you. In that way.
Well, the thing is, on the other hand, though, the thing to bear in mind is that the stealth field doesn't have a fade in or fade out rule
Right,
because,
right.
like, if you drop the stealth field, your ship still needs four impulses to recover. To get to activate to become active itself. But the enemy ship can spot you right away. So you're much more vulnerable than you are if you're decloaking. And the same is in reverse because there's no fade out either. So as soon as you activate the stealth field, you're limited. As the stealthing ship, but the other guy can still see you right up until the point that the stealth field becomes active. So,
Right. What
and
was
of
that?
course, to double back to the plasma fracs thing, if they ever do get done for the Alpha Octant, who's to say that you couldn't just steal them and give them Omega plasmas like you could easily do a mega version of them that has like tropic and implosion torpedoes, that sort of thing.
An
Or,
an an AFD that would actually, an AFD kind of weapon that would contain Troban missiles? What are you saying? Is that what you're saying?
No, what I mean is...
I'm sorry, tachyon missiles.
No, what I mean is... So, what I mean is I would replace the FAX drones, with drone racks, with tachyon missile racks, but I don't know if I'd bother with the AFD, because I think what you could do is... there are no Gatling phasers in Omega, but if the AFD is that big a spot, like it's the same size as like a quote-unquote full regular size weapon, then if you're converting it to Omega, to Isaron-type weapons, you'd either just replace the AFD with a tachyon missile rack or replace it with a wide-angle phaser one, but not both. So it would just be basically kind of the same kind of conversion process you do for Fed Commander, because, again, the AFD doesn't exist in SE.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I think with that, we'll wrap it up for the evening. Gary, it's been a pleasure having you around, and hopefully next time we'll have Gary Long with us.
Or vice versa.
Okay. True. Well, you have a good night.
Thank you.
Okay. So, had a nice little quick discussion about different aspects of the Omega sector, even, you know, brought in some of the lost futures and even some crazy ideas about simulations in the Omega Octant, because if you really think about it, they probably had simulator races in the Omega Octant too. They never showed up in the tapes. At least we don't have them as part of the tapes yet. So, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.